It is Saturday, April 1st, 2006, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today, we're covering Geek News of the Week and sharing some computer tips and tricks with you.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
Sit back and enjoy. Welcome to Geek Speak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the minis and the twits.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or its board, the Pataphysical Broadcasting Foundation. We're doing geek news today. We're taking your calls and questions with pledge driving, which we'll be talking about in a little bit. But today we're not taking your calls as we do every week for technology. But we will be answering some emails of calls or questions. And of course, we'll also be talking about the week news and some tips and tricks for better computer life, using your computer more like a geek. Geek Speak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, technical trainer at Surf Control, Drew Meyer, product manager at Network Appliance, and Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA Geeks. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Hey, happy April Fools.
Let's start our news story with...
I blew it already. April Fools, it's not April Fools.
Sean?
April Fools. Us geeks know that, you know, technology storage is suffering from the super paramagnetism phenomenon.
Yeah.
Right? That's right.
Yes, we all knew that, Sean.
Every morning I wake up thinking, oh, man.
Maybe people out there don't know.
Let me play my role.
Oh, wait, you guys don't know?
Sean, what is that?
So, super paramagnetism phenomenon occurs when magnetic bits of data on media, such as hard drives, are packed so closely together that they disrupt each other's on-off state, and then your data becomes corrupted.
High density.
Wait, magnetic bits of data, no pun intended?
That's beyond, yeah.
So this is a real issue with hard drives right now, because the read heads and write heads on these hard drives are becoming so small that the bits of data are, you know, almost laying on top of each other. So Seagate invented a technology called perpendicular recording, records bits of data up and down. Don't ask me how that works.
It's
crazy.
It's pretty impressive. So you know what? Let me tell you a little quick story here. When I was working at Quantum, I had a hard drive engineer tell me one time, imagine your hard drive, the mechanics involved is analogous to flying a 747 2 feet off the ground counting blades of grass. That is hard.
Oh, my gosh.
Trying to keep all this stuff working right, not falling apart.
Yeah, with that image in mind... Yeah. Back up your hard drive now.
So, where I'm leading with this story, the first holographic drives and media should be shipping next year. Holographic media is a new way of storing data not using magnetic technology.
Does it use holograms?
Yeah.
This is sort of a sci-fi theory that's come to real life, right?
It uses lasers. And the light is split into two beams, signal carrying and reference beams, and then data is encoded onto the signal beams via a spatial light modulator, and a bunch of stuff happens, and it's recorded. Let's not get into that. But anyway, drives should start coming out next year. Initially, they'll hold about 300 gigabytes of data. They'll only have about a 20 megabyte per second...
access speed.
Yeah, access speed, which is not fast at all for a hard drive. Maybe a quarter of what a current hard drive will do. But quickly, as they scale, they should start reaching 800 to 1.6 terabyte capacities. And what this means is we might actually have some viable means of backup in the future. Imagine a place where you could back your data up, not worry about it, and feel good about it.
Can you imagine filling up a 40 megabyte hard drive? I mean, that's just insane. That'd be more than we would ever need.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that's another joke for everybody.
Miles, since you're talking away, why don't you cover the next news story, sir? Go ahead, man.
The Economist is running a story that we soon, with luck, will be able to buy our own mythological pet. They're basically reverse engineering the DNA. This is a group called Gene Dupe to be able to create things such as dragons, unicorns, things like that. Although they were having a bit of problem getting a griffin. In other words, splicing the genomes for a lion and an eagle, but they still are fairly confident that it'll work.
Do they have like feathers coming out of a lion yet, or something like that?
Yeah, well, you know, they're working on it. Who knows what'll happen with
this,
that?
This story is completely
better living through chemistry.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I don't believe it. Give me the source.
Oh, TheEconomist.com.
That's a pretty reliable source.
Yeah.
Why are they covering a story like that?
Yeah, because it's the 1st of April.
Thank you very much, Miles. Drew, welcome. Right, welcome. Now, what's up for news?
While we all may wish that the government is an April Fool's joke sometimes, this is a true story.
Oh, no.
A small Alaskan fishing village is divided over surveillance cameras that have been paid for by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Dillingham, Alaska is a village of 2,400 people out in the tundra, has 6 police officers and no traffic lights, but the police chief told the LA Times that a remote area can sometimes be a backdoor for terrorists. Points out that the fishing docks could represent an opportunity for terrorists to smuggle weapons into the United States, and they now have Department of Homeland Security funds to buy $200,000 worth of security cameras. They're going to post them all over town, and members can monitor live shots on a television screen.
Drew, do you know the area of land they'll actually cover, area of coast that they'll cover with this?
I don't, and I'm assuming that it's in town. It's not pointed out all around town. I imagine this town with miles of flat tundra all around it.
Right.
Terrorists are sneaking up in the dark. But Anchorage has less than 40 cameras, and these guys in Dillingham now have 60, and they're going to get 20 more. It's true.
You're right. I wish that was a April Fool's joke.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the idea of doing that is just crazy. I mean, that to cover the coast with cameras.
Well,
first off, let's say you do it. Let's say you spend the billions of dollars to put cameras like that. Who's going to monitor all these things? I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, people will monitor.
But, you know, it's kind of cool that they have a lot of cameras, a lot of web cameras. Now, if you have access to the public, that'd be neat because then you can see how cool the town is and people can move there and all that stuff.
That seems like more Department of Tourism than Homeland Security.
You'd think, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Us data storage guys love stories like this where fill it up with pictures of the tundra.
That's great.
Yeah, sure, we'll store that.
Seagate supports this drive.
Exactly.
All right, thanks.
40 megabytes is not enough.
That's right.
You need perpendicular
recording.
Not
when you need to take 40 pictures of every town, every minute, every second.
Watch somebody run clear across the tundra.
Frame by frame.
Thank you, Drew, for that story.
Sure.
Sean?
Oh, so I don't know if people heard last week, but Dell purchased Alienware.
I read about that, and I was hoping
you would
talk about it.
Who is Alienware?
Oh, come
Miles.
On, Miles.
Dell is the largest manufacturer of computers, or is that Gateway?
Dell by far.
Dell's the largest manufacturer of computers. They bought another manufacturer.
Yes.
Why is this news, sir?
Alienware is, I would say, unarguably, the biggest and most successful retailer of enthusiast-level computers, gamers.
So this is
computers
a niche, that geeks buy?
A niche market that they've successfully dominated.
Yes, and
what does that mean?
Oh, Alienware is the ones with the really cool laptops, even right?
Laptops and desktop systems.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah, they're the ones that, you know, you look at the computer and it's not a gray beige box. The first ones that did that, they were selling really cool looking computers with gray gear.
Yeah, they have just amazing paint jobs. They use water cooling.
They get
chips that are binned at a higher speed, which means that they'll run faster when overclocked.
Oh, right. You were telling me about how processors, you actually have to check them.
People spend more money, you know, to buy Alienware systems because they know they're going to get the fastest gaming systems, you know, possibly on the planet before.
So this is the monster truck of the
computer world. Dell figured, well, they weren't selling AMD processors, and AMD is the preferred choice for enthusiasts right now because they own, you know, the top performance crown.
Sure.
So now Dell, because of their sweet deals with Intel, you know, possibly didn't want to start putting AMD processors in their own computers. So what they did is they bought Alienware and made them a wholly owned subsidiary. And then, you know, now they've got high-end enthusiast computers with AMD processors. kind of interesting story. There's a lot of people speculating on the web what this means, but the bottom line is, you know, you're going to probably start seeing more Alienware computers because now they can take advantage of, you know, Dell's their manufacturing process, and they'll have access to, you know, their sales and
organization. It makes sense. Taking the whole infrastructure, take the name, of course, which is important for enthusiasts, and, of course, have the support for AMD, finally, for Dell. I think that's great. Thank you, geeks, very much for the news. We're going to continue stories, maybe even some April Fool's jokes, who knows, in just a moment. But first, I want to talk to you quickly about what we're doing today and this week. We are asking you to support the station that you love and trust and know. When people make a pledge to KOSP, a lot of them feel that they are doing it to pay for all the listening they've done in the past. Others who make a pledge do so to pay for their future listening, and some do it as a pure expression of altruism, a genuine random act of kindness to pay for someone else's listening, someone who isn't able to give now. Your support provides this service to everyone. Do a good deed today and experience public radio karma. Call us now or make a pledge online at our secure website.
If you've been waiting for the right time to make your contribution to KOSP, now's that time. Your contribution to KOSP right now will be matched dollar for dollar by Marjorie Goodale for a total of $1,000, thanks to her generous grant. But hurry, this opportunity to match your contribution will end soon. Call the phone number 800-655-5877. That's 800-655-5877. Or you can make the contribution online now at our secure website, kosp.org.
News reporting must be accurate, yet an accurate accounting of the facts may not be journalism. The art of journalism demands that we report not only the substance of the story, but the spirit of the story as well. We practice journalism as a high art on KOSP, not always on GeekSpeak. You know that you can depend on us on this station for the spirit and the substance of stories whenever they occur. Your call with a pledge will help us continue bring the news and commentary. Call now with your pledge.
We'd like to thank Matthew in Santa Cruz, who just put in some money for Dr. Don. He listens to the opera show as well. Actually, he says he listens to everything, so way to go, Matthew. And also Galen in Salinas, California. He's a fan of Dr. Don. And one more. We've got Charles in Santa Cruz. It says SC. He's happy about the diabetic matching grant, and he's really pleased to be giving some money to KUSP. Thanks, guys. And don't forget, everybody, our secure website, very geeky thing to do, kusp.org.
You decide how much to contribute to KOSP Public Radio. When you contribute $80, you're entitled to receive the KOSP member card. It's good for 2-for-1 meals at restaurants near you, also good for 2-for-1 nights at bed and breakfasts and inns. And best of all, your $80 contribution helps to pay for the news, information, and music programs you rely on from KOSP and National Public Radio. Make that $80 pledge right now and receive the KOSP member card. Check it out and make your pledge online now at kusp.org or call 476-5900. That's 476-5900.
Let's get back into as calls come in. Let's get back to our news of the week, and in general, cover some more interesting stories. I'm going to go ahead and go to you, Drew.
I have a pretty interesting one here. This guy. So if you're a guitar player, you're in a band or anything like that, cool out there. That's fun. It's Gibson Guitar is a well-known name, and the CEO is a guy named Henry Yuskovitz, and he is he's really tech savvy, and he's spun off a division of Gibson called Gibson Labs to try to create some more high-tech involvement with musical equipment, which makes a lot of sense because there's electricity involved in both places. I saw him speak at a conference a few years back, and he's still pushing this. So on Friday, he announced that they're preparing to launch a digital audio product supported by gigabit Ethernet. Now, for home networking, Ethernet is the stuff that connects all your computers together, and it's the standard in the industry, in the business world. Gigabit means that it runs at 1,000 megabits per second. Most people at home run between 10 and 100 megabits per second. So this thing runs 10 times faster than your home network, and it lets you work with music sharing and file sharing at a faster pace, and it allows digital rights management to be involved in all this at the same time. So while it's not exactly clear what the product is yet, They're working hard to put networking products that are music-related that manage digital rights all at the same time.
Okay, I was trying to figure out, like, okay, what...
Bringing that home there.
Yeah, and it comes from a music giant.
Comes from a music giant, that's
right. Which is cool.
They're working with a semiconductor manufacturer called Cirrus Logic, which is a chip maker.
And they're not just a music giant in the respect that they produce music, but they help musicians make music.
They make guitars. Guitars and amps and all kinds of cool effects pedals and everything.
See, I love that because you get that situation where you get all these people that are thinking about supporting the people that create music, not that sell music, but they create music.
Yeah, they're insiders.
And then they're in the space on helping to make that easier. So they're not going to be putting DRM in everything. They're only going to put on DRM in stuff that is important because, of course, if you and I want to jam inside your place, we'd want to use their software and not have some kind of weird conflict of digital rights. Great story. Thank you, Drew, very much. Mr. Eel?
Sure. Top level domain, just to
give some background. .com, .org, .net.
Right. There's been recent pushes to have a new top-level domain called .xxx, .xxx, made for adult sexually material, explicit material. However, it with a recent ICANN meeting, ICANN stands for the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers.
They're the one that kind of manages the whole all the domain names at the root level,
They have put off making this top-level domain, put off the meetings for it.
This is really politically charged because you've got some people saying that this will produce more pornography material on the internet, and some people say, and it's kind of like, it's a weird conflict where you have people that are against pornography and degradation of women or degradation of people in general, siding with these major distributors of adult material because, of course, those people don't want to be subjugated to a subset of the net, if you will.
Well, I actually happen to think it's a horrible idea. The reason being is that what about all the people that already have .com domains and the like? Are you going to pay for them to transfer over? Are you going to make it free? If you have people who have conflicting domains?
And of course, you'd have to say if you're an adult provider, you have to be over at XXX domain. And then you'd have to somehow enforce that and restrict the amount of content you have on .coms, which means that you're saying some content's not appropriate for some websites.
But then comes the question of who decides what is acceptable, what is adult material, what is considered art, for example, what is considered, when you just have a nude model, for example, for someone in New York City, it's going to be very different than someone in Savannah, Georgia.
Sure.
And
so then the whole line of what type of pornography, is it pornography and who defines that? And ICANN is not set up to do that kind of thing.
A lot of the talk has been talking about protecting children, which is absolutely a noble goal. At the same time, how are you going to enforce this? Where's the money for law enforcement?
Because you can't just assume that all the other domains, .com, .org, .net, are safe for children.
Right.
You can't do that.
And I wonder why there isn't as much conversation about making a top-level domain called .kids.
And
this is something that you need to block off with everything else, just say this is kid safe, and if
that's a great solution.
Kids top level domain, then you're
that's great. I mean, because then you could say these sites, these are the rules for this kind of content, and maybe even a new header in the HTML documents to talk about what type of level. So this amount of violence, or whatever. That would be a great solution because anybody who wanted to produce kids material could do it, and the people that have kids, like myself,
And it's easy to be able to see, like, if you have a site that violates those standards, then you go like, okay, you lose your domain.
That's great. That's great. I love that idea. Why isn't that being talked about?
Because
you're just smarter than most people? Or
it wasn't actually my idea, but
oh, wait a minute.
Well, I don't like it then.
But at the same, people want to avoid having this type of material out there, so the immediate thing is, we'll put them all into one place.
Love the idea of making a root domain for children. I think that's just a great solution.
Unfortunately, material that people don't like is just like peeing in the pool. It's, you know, once it's in, you can't really get it out.
Right. Okay, thank you very much, Miles, for that. Mr. Cleveland, we are pretty much covering news and interesting stories for this first half hour. The second half hour, we're going to talk about tips and tricks for computing that's fun and makes your computer life easier. So do you got one more story for us?
I sure do.
And maybe we'll be able to hit Drew after that, too. So go ahead.
Quickly, CDR prices are set to rise 7-10% in the upcoming quarter.
CDR?
CD recordable. Disk prices.
For the media.
Blank media.
Why is it going up?
Well, DVD media is now being produced more and more, and that's cutting into CD media.
Uh-huh.
And we've got new types of technologies being launching, Blu-ray and HD DVD. That accounts for part of the reason. The other part is the drive manufacturers are starting to go away. Some small to medium-sized companies just aren't making it in this area because it's so cutthroat. And also,
are we talking about the drives or the media?
No, the media. The media. Discs. Okay. CDR discs, Lyle.
Okay. And the media companies then are going out, the
media,
small business.
No, the drive companies and the media manufacturers are converting their lines over to DVD.
Sorry, I got you. So, well, it kind of makes sense. I mean, you got a plant that's been making CDRs, and now DVD-Rs are coming out, and the technology is relatively similar. You know, you're taking a platter of transparent material, putting on some kind of dye, you put in a reflective coat, and if you're doing a lot more DVD creation, you're probably doing less CDs. And then, of course, there's a better price point for DVDs, and they probably cost the same to make. So that's interesting.
Be.
Does that mean we should buy them up now?
Might be a good idea. If you're going to buy some, buy it sooner rather than later. You know, 9 to 11 billion units are produced each year.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much, Sean. We do have time for you, Drew, to give us one more news story before.
All right, well, one or two episodes ago, we were talking about the Enigma machine, the German World War II decoder encryption box, and we did a story on how there was a guy who took a computer program and ran it against some old World War II encoded messages from the German army and was able to decode them using his computer, using software.
Or rather, it was a distributed effort, wasn't it?
That's right.
It was like City at Home.
Exactly. And he was able to crack it in a couple of hours rather than, I don't know, whatever it would have taken by hand. So anyway.
More than a few lifetimes.
Yeah, more than we have time for. The interesting story now is that eBay bidders have offered more than $30,000 for an actual genuine World War II-era German Enigma cipher machine, the actual machine that you would use to create these codes and decode them, a sum that's on the high side, according to a dealer. But it's kind of interesting to me that a piece of World War II German war memorabilia is pulling $30,000 down on eBay.
Yeah, I thought that was illegal as well, selling Nazi memorabilia.
I don't know. That's a great question. It's actually non-functional. It's kind of a prototype unit. It's missing a serial number, and the rotor is one of the pieces that set the codes are blank, so you can't actually use it to decode or encode anything.
And it's selling for how much?
$30,000 is what the bidding is up to right now.
Wow, that's quite a bit. I'm interested about that, Miles. I think that's a specific country related.
No, actually, a friend of mine is an employee of eBay and was telling me that Nazi memorabilia cannot be sold legally.
I wonder if this comes out of that memorabilia state in that it's, you know, different than just paraphernalia, if you will.
$36,477.70. What it's up to right now.
$30,000. Maybe it's just a differentiation of whether or not it has the swastika on it or not.
Maybe. I mean, I could see that, like plates and stuff, they're still functional, and if they have insignia, that would be paraphernalia about Nazism, so that wouldn't be sellable. Interesting.
We have no idea what we're talking about.
But we never do, Miles. That's the beauty of it. Just don't tell anybody.
Just between you and me, man.
Oh, good,
yeah,
good.
Let's
good.
Keep that on the down low.
Geek Speak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Felton offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. KOSP.org is growing to provide you with better access to all our great programming. Podcasts and on-demand audio archives are available for Talk of the Bay, Geek Speak, Youthtopia, Live at Lunch, Music Sessions, and more, including Dr. Don. So earlier show, Dr. Don, about half an hour ago, great discussion with a doctor about diabetes and glucose control. That's online, of course, at kosp.org. Geek Speak is supported by Cruise.io Internet. Offering DSL broadband, computer rentals, and tune-ups. Cruise.io has rental stores in downtown Santa Cruz and Watsonville. More information can be found online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. News reporting must be accurate, yet an accurate accounting of the facts may not be journalism. The art of journalism demands that we report not only the substance of the story, but the spirit of the story. We practice journalism as a high art on KUSP. You know that you can depend on this station for the spirit of the substance of stories whenever they occur. Your call with a pledge will help us continue bringing you the news, information, and geeky stuff, including all the other content we do on KOSP. Call now with your pledge.
If you're just joining us, here's what you've missed. As you may know, we're in the midst of our spring membership campaign. What you may not be aware of is that your contribution to KOSP right now will be matched dollar for dollar up to $1,000, thanks to a generous grant from Marjorie Goodale. But hurry, this opportunity to match your contribution will end soon. Right now, make your pledge to KOSP count even more. Call 800-655-5877. That's, once again, 800-655-5877. 7777. Or make your contribution online now at our secure website, kusp.org.
I'd like you to take a moment to count the ways you pay to be connected in our society. Cell phones, internet connections, cable television with premium channels. The price adds up pretty quickly. Now consider how much, newspaper, there's tons of stuff that you spend. Now consider how much you use KUSP. In the morning when you wake up, as you drive to and from work, on the weekends to hear your favorite program, when you think of it, KUSP connects you to the world like no other source. During this membership campaign, we're asking listeners to help pay the costs of running the station. Won't you call now and pay your fair share?
You decide now how much to contribute to KUSP Public Radio. When you contribute $40, you're entitled to receive the U.S. Constitution and Fun Facts book. And best of all, your $40 contribution helps to pay for the news, information, and music programs you rely on from KUSP and National Public Radio. Make that $40 pledge right now and receive U.S. Constitution and Fun Facts book. Check it out and make your pledge online now at kusp.org or call locally at 476-5900. Once again, that's 476-5900.
Let's go ahead and do some fun facts of geekdom. Mr. Cleveland, last night you spent some time taking some of the tips and tricks you use when you install Windows and use Windows to build up a little article about, geek tips and tricks to making Windows better. And you published that on GeekSpeak, which is great, geekspeak.org, today's show, which is April 1st. This isn't an April Fool's joke. Just consider everything Miles is saying is April Fool's joke, but anybody else, we're serious all the time.
When have I ever lied to anyone?
April Fools. No, so, Sean, what's the first thing you do after installing Windows on a brand new machine? What do you do next?
I hoop and holler for joy.
It worked.
Eureka.
It worked. It's not Linux or Mac. Yay.
I go out and celebrate.
April Fools.
He calls me.
Actually, I guess the first thing I do is the last tip that I list on that page.
Oh.
And that is I open up my Windows Explorer, and then I go to Tools.
You mean the file browser, right? Not Internet Explorer, but the Windows Explorer, the file browser. Okay,
yes.
Go on.
Not Internet Explorer browser, but yes.
And you open that by opening a folder.
Okay. Yeah, so when you first install Windows, getting to the Windows Explorer, you go to Start, All Programs, Accessories, and then Windows Explorer. And if you want to look at the files in your computer on your hard drive, this is the best way to do it. I think it's better than clicking my computer on your desktop. But that's just me. So when you're in Windows Explorer, you can actually make your files look different depending on if you like them looking as a thumbnail or if you want more file details. A lot of times, Windows first hides everything on your C drive from you. That drives me crazy. So I go into...
Right, because if you out of the box, most people experience this, they open up the hard drive and look at C, it'll say protected or whatever.
Yes, it's protected. It doesn't want you to look at system files, so it hides them from you. So in Windows Explorer, you go to Tools, and then you go to Folder Options, and once there, you click on the View tab, and then you have access to all this great, these great little settings that allow you to actually see things like file extensions and your protected operating system files, hidden files and folders.
One thing I like is display file size information and tooltips. So if you hover over folder, it'll tell you information about the folder.
Yeah.
Love that.
So you can then go through and select all these settings. You can say, show me those hidden files and folders. Don't hide them from me. And then
you can erase fun things you shouldn't.
And then what I do is I click OK, and then I can actually see everything on the C drive. And then I make my Windows Explorer the size that I want it to be, and I stretch the columns out so that I can actually read the file names. And then I set it for details so I can actually see my file details. Mm. And once I've done all of that, I go back into Folder Options. Again, by going to Tools and Folder Options, I go back to View. And then I click the Apply to All Folders button. And what that does is it takes all those little things that I did to make it look like I want it to look and saves them across every folder.
So now when you open up a folder, you get the folder bar on the left-hand side.
I get everything I wanted for every folder.
Oh, I didn't know how to do that. And then, of course, the other thing you want to do is make sure you uncheck the keep different attributes for every folder. What's that one called? Do you remember?
If you just apply to all folders,
yeah. Apply to folders, then it overrides all.
Apply to all folders, overrides all.
Great tip. Now, this tip's
so
available.
Nice.
Available on geekspeak.org. And, of course, kusp.org has linked to us, of course. So kusp.org, you can go over to the Geekspeak
site. Of course,
site.
It's missing the best Windows tip of all.
What's that?
Change to Mac, right, Miles?
Exactly.
I couldn't see that coming a mile away.
So funny, because you used to be so OS agnostic.
I think he's always been kind of a Linux fanatic.
That's clearly not the case any longer.
When Miles first joined GeekSpeak, he was very OS agnostic.
You know what the difference is? He's been using a Macintosh computer. So now he knows. Miles?
Yes, now I know it is better.
The brainwashing has taken effect.
You know,
well, I got to give him some props. One of the tips that I'm working on posting right now is about this thing called clamxav.com. It's a free antivirus scanner for Mac, and it's open source based on Unix technology,
great.
Linux and Unix integration. But kind of the funny part is when you go to that website, www.clamxav.com, guy talks about how it's great to have a free antivirus for Mac OS. Unfortunately, you won't catch anything because there are no viruses for Mac OS.
You know, it's true, though. Even though there's no viruses, any day now, there's going to be one. And if you're not protected,
or they have been, they've just been
not very good.
Well,
in fact, Miles, I think you did a story not long ago that one did come up.
Actually, it was three in the course of 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's cool to have that running. And the other thing he points out on the site is that when you open and deal with other files, it's nice to be able to send them on to somebody not infected.
It's true.
Even if it doesn't bother you, it might land on somebody else's machine and screw
them
up.
You can still spread them to other people. It's like having dirty hands and shaking hands all day. You might not get sick, but you might get sick. Someone else gets sick. All right. So we're handling tips and tricks today. We're also going to cover a couple interesting previous email in, if you will, from listeners that have emailed us. You're welcome to email us any time with questions and comments. You just go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. Lots of times we don't reply, and that's because we all volunteer for the show, for KOSP, and for you every week. And we all have jobs, and we're quite busy. But we do make a time and effort every week to be here to do this wonderful show. And the one thing that I'm missing this show is hearing your voice. Normally, we invite you to call us into the second half of the show and ask us questions about technology and such. Today, we're not able to do that, mostly because we want to make sure those lines are open to you to call in to pledge. And we'll be talking a little bit about that in just a second. All right, so I'm going to go on, Sean. I really like this article. I think it's a blast for you to be able to throw this stuff up. I'm glad that I was able to finally make the web tools to enable you to do this kind of thing. And Drew is adding a URL as we speak. As long as not all of you edit at the same time, we'll be okay. So one thing that happens when you use this tool, when you use this web tool, and most people that publish stuff online, is that when they copy and paste in, sometimes they get these weird characters that don't work online. You'll see web pages sometimes, they'll be like, you'll see the text, and where it should be quotes, there'll be like a little box, a little square.
Or a question mark.
Question mark. It's really annoying. And and lots of times people like to use like Microsoft Word, and the problem is that it's making, what is a different character set, Miles? What's going on in Word that makes things be weird when you copy into other applications?
Yeah, it is a character encoding. When you have... how character encoding came about was when you had different languages working in there, and some people wanted to have Greek letters or Russian characters, or for that matter, the European character set where you have an E with an acute or a grave accent or circumflex or something like that. But you had to tell people which one you were using. Otherwise, other people who were using the exact same code for a particular letter would see a just different letter plugged in.
And basically, this is because when computers were first working, ASCII was first working, they kind of defined a simple character set. And then as more languages are added in, more typography has
topographical.
Added. Blah, 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 blah. You got more complexity. Okay, so how do you turn off those, what we call smart quotes, things like that, in Word, so that you don't see that kind of stuff?
That's the thing. A lot of people, what they'll do is type whatever they're going to publish on the web in Word, and then copy that out, paste it in Notepad to clear out all those extra characters and convert them to normal ASCII characters, and then put that on
on
their
the
HTML
web,
and publish it.
Uh-huh.
So, that's quite a long step. You shouldn't have to do that. In Microsoft Word, what you do is, you go up to our website and you follow the instructions.
good idea.
And, of course, if we were really cool, we'd have a processor that when we input the text, it would automatically convert it. But, but we're volunteers.
Cool. All this is in the autocorrect options in the tools menu. So just go to geekspeak.org, click on today's show, and you'll see...
And scroll down to disable Microsoft Word smart quotes. Okay, thank you, Sean, for putting all that up. I really appreciate it. Let's go ahead and let me first remind you that in just a moment we'll be getting back to more tips and tricks about using your computer. So stay tuned. We'll even cover some Linux tips and some Mac tips. Who knows what? And we got lucky today. Yesterday, Daria and my wife Daria is here now. Our son was sick. So, unfortunately, this morning, Daria wasn't able to join us. Be pitching with me, but we practiced, and so now she's here. And thank you so much, Daria, for coming and supporting the station. Daria, of course, does Life Under the Lights segment on Friday's Talk of the Bay, talking about art in the area. And I just want to ask you to pay for the service you just, well, you are listening to right now. You pay for your newspaper subscription. You pay when you go to a concert. You pay when you go to a movie. You pay when you buy a book. Your $10 or $20 a month goes a long way and will invest in the future of KSP for you and the community that you live in. Become a partner with us today. Call us now or make a pledge online at our secure website.
This is one of the things I really love doing. I love Pledge Drive. I love trying to get people to, you know, pick up that phone and make that call to us, or to go online and go to the secure website.
You just want other people to participate in the station as much as you and I participate.
I really do care about the station. We want to remind you that we do have a matching pledge from Marjorie Goodale. We'll match every pledge to KUSP up to a total of $1,000. So your contribution will be matched dollar for dollar. If you are a returning member or a new member to KUSP, your pledge goes twice as far right now. And we do have a pledge that came in from an anonymous donor, and the Geeks want to thank this person, who is a longtime supporter of Geek Speak and is a friend of ours, for this generous contribution of, oh, we don't say how much, but
thank you,
this very
thank you, anonymous donor.
We still have the matching Goodale grant of $1,000, so it's not all of that, that's for sure. But thank you very much for that. I know who that is, and I really appreciate your donation to KSP.
So, if you've been waiting for the right time to make your contribution to KUSB, now's that time. Your contribution to KUSB right now will be matched dollar for dollar, thanks to the generous grant from Marjorie Goodale. But hurry, this opportunity to match your contribution will end soon. Call 800-655-5877. That's 800-655-5877, or make your contribution online now at our secure website, kusp.org.
There's an old saying, if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. Keeping up on the news has never been more important. The economy can change in the blink of an eye. World politics can tumble into chaos with one stroke of the pen. And if you're not scared enough, don't worry. KSP is the news source you can turn to when you need to know. You need to know, because ignorance can be very costly. We keep our standards high with the help of listeners like you. Call now with your pledge. Contribute what you can to this membership support drive.
Pledge $240 for a zip hooded sweatshirt. You decide how much you contribute to KUSP Public Radio. When you contribute $240, really only $20 per month when you think about it, you're entitled to receive the new KUSP hooded zip sweatshirt as our thanks for your pledge. The sweatshirt is navy blue and proudly features the new KUSP logo. The KUSP sweatshirt is sure to become a favorite, maybe even as beloved as the old sweatshirt you still got from college. You'll also receive the KUSP member card, good for 2-for-1 meals at restaurants near you. Also good for 2-for-1 nights at bed and breakfasts and inns. And best of all, your $240 contribution helps to pay for the news, information, and music programs you rely on from KUSP and National Public Radio. Make that $240 pledge right now, just $20 a month, and receive the KUSP member card and member sweatshirt. Check it out and make your pledge online at kusp.org or call 476-5900. That's 476-5900.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. That was Daria Troxell. The Geeks This Morning, Sean Cleveland, Drew Meyer, and Miles Elam. Thank you, Geeks, for being here. All right, let's go on with tips and tricks on machines. Drew, please.
Michael from Monterey sent an email, and he's got some information on that eBay controversy we were just talking about, where eBay actually banned Nazi memorabilia, but Nazi materials are not necessarily banned. And, of course, he points out a very good point: who determines what's memorabilia and what's actual stuff?
Like a plate example, I was
suggesting.
Right, right. Is it or not?
Is it memorabilia? Who knows?
Okay, so they make the decision, and I guess they basically turn off it if they think that it's...
if it glorifies.
It shouldn't be prosecuted, yeah. All right. Well, I think the Enigma machine's is a worthwhile knowledge.
It's a piece of history.
Definitely, definitely. All right, let's do a tip or trick. Miles, do you got one for Macintosh, or is it just too easy an operating system to need any tips?
I dare you to give us a tip or a trick, Miles.
There is an item that I use all the time with my Mac, and that is called Quicksilver.
This is a geek feature. This is for people that don't like to use the mouse as much.
Right, but it's definitely for people that think of, for example, a Mac as not having a command line, for people who like the Unix world or who like to tinker around with it. This is something that's the best of both worlds, part graphical user interface, part
God, man, what is it? What is it?
Well, I hit a keystroke, for example, control space, it pops up a little text box, and I start typing in what I'm looking for. And it could be the name of a program, it could be the title of an email, it could be just about anything, and it searches through my system and itemizes a list of things that match, and then I just choose it from there. So it keeps me from having to go searching around the hard drive or having to have, for example, with our Windows compatriots that have 20,000 programs all in their start menu, I can just have a simple thing that I open it up and type in, you know, calculator.
Or CA, really, and it launches calculator.
Or CAL, yeah.
Okay, and that's Quicksilver. Have you added that to the GeekSpeak site?
No, I have not added to the GeekSpeak site.
Get on that, man. Okay,
Actually, Didi has just been talking about that. There's more to it than that, because Spotlight will also do that. That comes with the operating system.
But there are definitely more to that. And actually, I can't stand Spotlight, which is a part of OS X Tiger. It seems to be always slow and doesn't find the stuff I need. And the thing with it is it's got a giant library and it does your entire computer. I don't really want to do that. I kind of want to control what it's searching and finding, and Quicksilver allows you to do that. So that's why I use Quicksilver. I have one more Mac tip, and then we'll get back to some Windows tips, unless there's a Linux tip from any of you. The Mac tip that I've got is when you've got a window open in your Macintosh, most of the time in the title bar, the name of the file that you have open normally, this is most applications, not all, like your browser won't work. But let's say you've got Word up or something. There's an icon right next to the title in the title bar. And that icon normally kind of represents the document type you're dealing with. And then, you know, whatever, it's interesting. You can do some cool things with that, though. Let's say you want to email the document you currently have open. You can just push your cursor on that little icon and drag it to your email, and it will copy that file to your attachment. So it's a great way to attach things to documents. The other thing that's great is lots of times I'll have a document open. I can't remember where I saved it. And, you know, you go to most open most recently and you'll find the document and then you open it and you're like, I wonder where this is on my computer. You can hold down the control key, the command key, excuse me. That's the one with the clover leaf, the Apple key. You hold that down when you push and hold on the icon in the title bar and you'll see the entire path of where that file is on your computer. And you can select any one of those folders to open it. Kind of cool feature. Okay. Let's do a Windows tip. Mr. Cleveland, should we go back to your article that you've posted up online?
Sure.
What's the virus protection software you come because on?
So we talk about this a lot on the show, and people have asked us, where do you get this? And the problem we run into is it seems like every spam person out there has bought an URL that either is, you know, it takes advantage of every misspelling of Grisoft's name. So the company is Grisoft, and the software is AVG Antivirus Protector, Antivirus.
We've talked about this for like three shows in a row at least, yeah.
And then if you go to Grisoft.com, that's the company, and you can get access to their antivirus software, but it costs money because they're a big company and they sell this worldwide and make, you know, a lot of people use the software.
But they've got a cool free one.
We're talking about the free edition that they make available for personal use.
So let's
and that's where we finally put the link. You can get it here, and we talk about exactly what you get with the free
version. So you go to geekspeak.org, click on today's show, which is April 1st, 2006, and there's a link right under the whole instructions on how to use it called Download Your Copy Today. That'll take you to the right
page. If you do not have antivirus software on your computer,
do this.
On your Windows, go there and get this.
I think it's interesting to note, Grisoft is a Czech company. There's a number of free software companies. They're the biggest one, free antivirus companies. They're the biggest one with commercial success as well. And Intel recently put $50 million into them as a private venture firm.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's good news. So people trust them.
So they're the real deal. Don't worry about it. As far as we know, anyway.
As long as you get to the right site, which you can do by going to geekspeak.org and click on the April 1st, 2006 show.
They have 25 million installs.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's
so,
quite a bit.
I mean, they're a player.
Yeah.
Not like the top three, but they're for when you get what you pay for, I should say. It's a good deal.
Yeah, it is.
And I'm getting updates all the time. So people are working there.
You know, the thing that I love about that the AVG when it's on my Windows machine is it doesn't seem to be as much a resource hog as some of the other big boys.
Well, that's one of their...
Microsoft's not bloated, right?
That's what they say. You actually... I took that out of the... It didn't seem like it was a big benefit, but it is. They're not bloatware. They don't take up a lot of resources like some of the big three.
Yeah. Names shall be not
antivirus.
Be named.
You know, one of the things I do when I install Windows for the first time is I change kind of its look. I like the kind of more classic look of Windows, because the XP kind of candy button look kind of looks like a bad implementation of Macintosh, and I just can't stand the look. I like the old style look. Uh-huh. What kind of look do you do on your computer, Sean?
Well, I just learned this recently. Microsoft made available their theme from the Media Center Edition, which is not available to consumers. Unfortunately, you have to buy a computer with Media Center on it. But the theme for Media Center has been totally redone, and Microsoft made it available. It's called Royale. The link is up on geekspeak.org right now in the tips and tricks section. And what it does is it, instead of being a shell replacement, you know, a separate piece of software that runs on top of Windows that makes it look different, which, you know, oftentimes taxes your system's performance, this actually integrates with the rest of your themes into Windows. I mean, it's from Microsoft. And it looks a little nicer. It looks a little nicer. I think it's something new. Yeah, certainly not Macintosh level.
Or Vista, which is coming out next.
You know,
right?
But we'll get that with Vista.
Yeah.
So, and speaking of Vista, Microsoft has contacted me and they'd like to have a guest rep on. Yeah, come on the show and talk about
it. We'll take them. That'd be great. We'll ask Miles not to be here that day, and that'd be great. No, I'm just kidding. You know, the Mac and Windows battle is something we like to tease about and such, but when it comes down to it, the computing environment you feel comfortable on, that's the one you should use. If you're a brand new user, little harder decision. And what I recommend, what we kind of always recommend, is go play and see first. You know, kind of, if you got a friend that has a Mac, go do it. And if you got a friend that has a Windows machine, go do that. Now, if you have a certain application, make sure the applications you want to use are available in the operating system you want to use it. And that's really important, because the truth of the matter is the computer is just a tool to help you and what you want to do. So one thing, this last week we've been talking about what we want to do for the April 1st show, knowing that we weren't able to take calls, or we can take calls, of course. Your pledges are always welcome. But we wanted to provide you with an hour of really good geek content. And at first we were going to do kind of a debate between Mac and Windows. And what it turned into really quickly is, you know, the debate is so... it's not education. It's more, you know, interest. And it's interesting, but it's not informative. So we decided instead to do tips and tricks. But we did get a caller, someone who called to pledge. Thank you very much for the pledge. A window user, they're thinking of buying a laptop. What's the advantages, disadvantages of a Mac laptop versus, you know, a Windows? And can we address that a little bit? Miles, what do you think the advantage is from someone coming from Windows to buy a Mac laptop rather than a Windows laptop? It's not the price.
Why isn't it the price, first of all? I would say that's the price.
Well, honestly, one of the
price to stay to Windows, or
no? If you don't have anything and you're looking at them apples to apples, excuse the analogy, but the Mac is going to be more expensive.
That's yes.
It depends on what you're getting. One of the big pushes, actually, or one of the big things people have been noticing about Apple is their service, and that's one of their main justifications anyway for their higher price.
Mm-hmm.
Their
service?
Reason,
what do you mean?
Do they give you free tech support? Do they give you? What does that mean?
I'm trying to. The only thing I have are anecdotes.
Okay,
where people
give us
have
an anecdote.
A problem.
What the heck?
People coming back with an iPod, and it will be a couple of days after the warranty is expired. And a lot of companies will go, "Well, you're a couple of days after the warranty. You know, goodbye." But it's been this recurring theme where I've heard of people going to the Apple store and they're saying, "Well, okay, you're a day off."
Okay, right. I appreciate that as, you know, an anecdotal and maybe even factual, completely factual, that they maybe have really great service. But that depends on who you buy from, right? Dell, Gateway, they do have service. So let's talk away from service. What about the computer itself, the experience of using it and stuff? Is it that different? Is it worth? And first off, Drew, is Drew's assertion that Windows machines are cheaper than Mac machines accurate?
In price, dollars. I'm talking
dollars
cheap
dollars,
in terms
uh-huh.
of price. Miles got a great point about service. There's a value there, too.
But. Yeah, and I mean, aside from my own biases saying that the hardware and the software work better together because there's a single vendor working on them, on the whole package. But another reason why someone might want to get a Mac, so that they're not as susceptible to viruses and spyware.
Okay. And Dee Dee from New York, one of our regular geeks who's not with us today, she got a brand new Apple laptop. Right at the end of her Apple Care plan, which is the kind of insurance plan, if you will. Right at the end of it, they gave her a brand new one because they couldn't fix the trackpad correctly on it. So she was able to get a new computer. So that's pretty good endorsement on their service.
He'll never sell me on it.
But the thing is, I think if you're in a Windows environment, you're thinking about getting a new computer,
yeah.
Then moving to the Mac is going to be
hard. All my files are Windows based. Exactly. All my applications that I paid for and spent so much time
with
on.
And talk
I like the game. I like to replace the hardware on my computer. I mean, God, I could go on and on about this. It's really your personal choice.
And he does.
It's your personal choice.
There's nothing complicated about supporting public radio. It really couldn't be easier. And there's nothing more important at this time than taking part in this campaign. As a listener, you make everything you hear on KUSP possible. You are the most reliable source of income. That's a simple equation. You listen and KUSP provides the news, information, and music you value. Please make your call of support now. Remember, it's easy and very important.
And if you're just joining us, here's what you missed. As you may know, we're in the midst of our spring membership campaign. What you may not be aware of is that your contribution to KUSP right now will be matched. We have a $1,000 matching grant from Marjorie Goodale. Thanks to that generous grant from her. But hurry, this opportunity to match your contribution will end soon. Right now, make your pledge to KUSP count even more. Call 800-655-5877. That's 800-655-5877. We have $600 remaining on this matching grant. You can also make your contribution online now at our secure website, kusp.org. We'd like to thank Sylvia from Santa Barbara for your contribution, as well as Anonymous from Santa Cruz, who challenges all closet geeks to pledge to KUSP right now.
We love those closet
geeks.
And
if you're out of the closet.
Like Miles. Phone numbers again, Daria?
800-655-5877.
And that again, that's
800-655-5877.
Most broadcast media takes less than a minute to tell the story. You hear the headline. KUSP takes the time we need to bring you the whole story. Whether it takes 3 minutes or 30, we bring you the essential points of stories that affect your life. This kind of insightful broadcasting takes time, quality journalists, and resources. Listeners like you help pay for the insightful news that you hear every day on KUSP. Please join your co-patriots. Call now with your pledge.
Call 476-5900. That's 476-5900 right now. And in about 3 minutes, you'll be a KUSP member. We won't take up a lot of your time with lots of questions. Just your name, address, how much you want to contribute, and which thank you gifts you'd like for your pledge. Call 476-5900. That's 476-5900. Or log on to our secure website at kusp.org and make a pledge right now.
And remember, we have a great, we have $600 remaining on a wonderful grant from Marjorie Goodale. And you can match your money right now by calling in to support KUSP. A dollar for dollar match, whatever you want to contribute. The phone number is 800-655-5877. Again, 800-655-5877. We'd like to say thank you for listening to KUSP today. We'll do it on air all the time. Thank you so much. And we do it on the phone when you call in. Thank you so much. I want to thank also in the air room the geeks today. Drew Meyer, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and of course, Daria Troxell. Thank you very much for being here to help spread the word that we're a great resource.
Coming up right next is Castle Cottage.
Yes, Castle Cottage is coming up momentarily, and I just want to thank all the geeks. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. We'll be back next week on Geek Speak. We're going to talk about, well, tech camps for your kids, getting your kids into geek tech. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto, streaming live and podcasting at kusp.org. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. For KUSP and Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell.